There we go. I click the button so that we can actually remember all the weird stuff we were saying beforehand.
Hi, my name is Thomas Brooks, and I am addicted to being a fan of Whataburger.
Yeah. I mean, I was trying to think, what are the weirdest things that people are, like, the weirdest, like, corporations that people are a fan of?
Apple?
Yeah.
Because, like, there's a difference between liking their product and, like, that era of the Steve Jobs, like, wannabe.
Making
Tesla.
It your identity. Yeah, Tesla might be a good one. Like, again, there's a difference between buying a car, enjoying your car, and like it kind of consuming your identity. I understand, like, Buc-ee's.
Yeah, that makes sense, because
I get that.
It's kind of like the Queen of England. Who is Buc-ee? We don't know. We'll just project all of our, like, childhood insecurities onto it and love it. But, like, Steve Jobs and Elon Musk.
We know them. We know who they are.
We know who they are. They're not your dad.
Oh, thank God.
They're somebody's dad.
Well. Oof.
Oof.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think, like, I mean, I would almost argue almost any company, like anyone again, like I'll go back. I'll talk about Magic the Gathering a lot this bit, but I can like this card game and enjoy it with friends. I am never going to stick up for Hasbro.
Right.
Ever. I mean, if I was, they lost me when they called the Pinkertons on someone.
Fair.
Right? Right?
I'm trying to think of what a company, because I think the ideal form for, like, a corporation and, like, the year of our Lord 2024 is to create a fandom around your product and your companies and, like, your identity, right? Like, that's something that's really important. And, like, some things make sense, like Buc-ee's makes sense because it's like the people of Texas drive everywhere for hours, and if you're gonna slap on a cute mascot, like, we're sold. You give us a clean bathroom and, like, 496, like, gas pumps, and, like, we'll be your best friend.
I mean, like, from an ethical standpoint, too, they pay their employees really well.
They do.
They're a pretty, they seem to be a pretty decent company. I mean, we'll probably find out that they'd, like, engage in human sacrifice or something, but, like.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not a
that's where the
fossilized
jerky comes
marine
from.
Mollusks. Oh, no, not the jerky wall. But I'm trying to think of, like, a company that has, like, a really weird, like, they're trying too hard to, like, create fandom and, like, being really cringe about it.
I think there are a lot of celebrities that do that. I think there are some, like, prominent internet celebrities, or, like, Twitter users, owners. Who are just, like, trying a little too hard to, like, make people like them. And not, like, naturally. Like, look, I'm engaging with you. Like, I'll be your daddy figure.
Right.
Or mommy,
like,
figure.
Jordan Peterson does it well.
I think with him, he just does his own thing. And people sort of latch on. Like, he's not going out of his way to, like, make you like him. He's just being this sort of... Though, I mean, I've seen some stuff where it seems he does get really upset when people don't like him, but...
That's fair.
There's that...
He's
there's that
guy.
Yeah.
Soft hands. Soft clinical psychologist hands.
Soft Kermity voice. So,
Oh,
well, I
but no, it would
guess.
be like, I don't know, Lockheed Martin coming out with like a mascot. That's what I'm thinking.
I am gonna look up right now. We have not even started this episode yet. I'm leaving all of
What
this
is the
in.
mascot of Lockheed Martin?
I am looking up if they have one. It's a skunk.
It's a skunk.
A team engineer named Irv Culver was a fan of Al Capp's comic strip Lil Abner, in which there was a running joke about a mysterious place deep in the forest called the Skunk Works. And so Lockheed Martin has the Skunk Works.
That's perfect.
And so they have a skunk mascot. It is an old drawing. So this might not be new, like this might not be currently adopted, but it is part of their legacy. That is pretty at one point, brand mascot, Lockheed Martin's Skunk Works skunk. Holy moly. There it
They have the
is.
skunk on their hangers,
Okay.
their
Yeah,
plane hangers. Yeah.
they have a mascot. But I mean, it's not like
Okay.
they're not like marketing it. It doesn't look like you can get like a skunk plush, right?
Right, yeah, like the skunk doesn't have an X account and is like telling you like, I don't know, like everyone's equal in like the reign of terror of missiles, like I don't know.
But every June they color the skunk rainbow. They would, right?
Except for their Middle East handle. That one stays
Yes.
the
Yeah. Lockheed Martin Middle East keeps the normal skunk.
little rainbow tail. Oh, man. Okay. Well, hats off to Skunk Works.
So hello and welcome everyone.
Hello.
To a delayed intro, but we wanted to give you some insight into kind of like the weird stuff we talk about before we get started. This is another episode of Psychosocial Distancing. I'm one of your hosts, Daniel Chadbourne. With me as always is Thomas Brooks.
Hello. I still don't have my
And
Whataburger, but I'm here.
yeah, we started getting into like weird fandom, like what are corporations that people just, I don't want to be cringe and say like people simp over, but like that's the appropriate language to use, right? Like
That,
that
yes.
that's the language the kids are. I'm a little old and out of touch, but like that's the language the kids are using.
I don't know if the kids are using simp anymore, but at
It is
least
a,
like 2 years ago they were.
yeah, it's an appropriate term that they are like, and again, they're a corporation. You don't have to do that, right? They don't, they're not
They're not your
people.
friend.
Despite the Supreme Court decision, they're not people.
I
So
see.
this kind of gets us into what we're talking about. We're talking about chapter one, hate book, multidimensional model of fan interest. Chapter one is magnitude. And
Do you like magnums? I like the raspberry ice cream with the chocolate on the little stick.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm lost.
Oh, you don't know the Magnum ice cream?
Do I? I probably do if I saw it.
Yeah, there's a brand of ice cream called Magnum, and it's really good.
Was like, is this a gun comment or a
Is it a gun
condom
comment? Is it
comment?
a comment? It's an ice cream.
It's an ice cream comment. Okay. Sure, I probably do like it. I'd have to, yeah, I'll have to look that up after the Lockheed Martin thing. So yeah, magnitude is basically the extent, the intensity in which one is or does identify with a fan community or is a part of a fan community or a fan interest. So again, that fandom fanship distinction that we'll get into in a later chapter, much more in depth, but it ties to involvement, it ties to consumption. I mean, almost everything, right? Purchasing, attending, talking about it, producing stuff that's related to it, fanship, belonging, shared values, emotional connection, kind of like everything. The higher your identity with the interest, the more you do all the stuff that we expect to see in fans.
And there's some like, some messy stuff involved with like high identification, like having a higher magnitude of fan interest, right? Like on one hand, we do see like increases in well-being and like sense of belonging and like identity security, right? Which are all fabulous things to have. On the other hand, these are also the people that are going to get caught up in the internet drama, and it's going to make the fandom will like simultaneously give them good psychosocial benefits as well as put them into a nightmare of fan drama and discourse at the same time.
Because it ties to other things like identity threat and again, if you're maintaining aspects of your self-esteem using this identity, when that identity is called into question, you're going to lose that self-esteem. And again, just take any rise and fall internet celebrity and look at how their fan community has reacted to some controversy. It's always a mix. I mean, you have some people who are probably not high on fanship to start with, who are easy to like walk away. You have people who are anti-fans who are gonna like jump in the middle of it and stir stuff up. They're gonna like really dig deeper. You have some people defending, ignoring, trying to engage with what's going on in different ways. And sometimes it's tough. I mean, sometimes the controversy is unfounded, and you've got, someone who's being targeted, or things get blown out. And because it's the internet, like whatever you heard the last person say is what's truth, right? And again, the higher your fan interest towards the people that you're getting that information from is also going to increase the likelihood that you're going to believe them and that you're going to take their word over someone else's. It's sort of, as a psychologist, it's really fascinating to watch this stuff play out in real time, especially for people I don't care about, right? Like that I'm distant on. But on the other hand, like if you're in the middle of it, if you are a fan of that, like, you got to deal with that, right? Like you've got to come to terms with it internally.
I would argue that the further in you are, like the higher that identification is, the less likely you are. Like that creates the cognitive dissonance. And so you're either going to like, higher identity is going to be like, I'm going to pick up the like my sword and defend my interest, or I'm going to ignore the shit out of this. And then the lower identities are going to keep quiet or walk out or throw their hands up and go, this isn't for me anymore. You'll have fun, I think a good example of this is like the controversy around J.K. Rowling's, right? Like, turns out there are much more people with high identifying fan interest in her work than those who are not.
It starts kind of getting into the realm of like, you don't have to like the person, but you can like their work. And that, like, I think that too, like, J.K. Rowling's a really fascinating thing when it comes to like magnitude, like thinking about fandom. Because
I
like
would
there's
also argue
so
maybe
many.
that like most of her fans probably don't even know anything about her.
The because a lot of that stuff's happening on like Twitter. And again, the average person is not on Twitter. Just sheer numbers, the average person isn't on Twitter.
There's probably more people with Deathly Hallows tattoos in their mid to late 30s who don't know anything beyond those books changed my childhood.
My brother's got one.
Oh yeah, tons of people do.
So, yeah.
You're very good at tattoo, like you can't really back out now.
Yeah. And I mean, and again, like, I've seen a lot of discourse around that too. And I think that kind of ties to some of the cognitive dissonance. You have these really high identifying fans. They grew up with it. This is such a big part of their childhood and their life. And so if you do find out about this stuff, it's just sort of like, well, I don't have to like J.K. Rowling as a person. But I can still enjoy what she did, and it was still meaningful for them. Like, she can't take that away. No one can take that. No one can take that away from them. It doesn't suddenly like ruin that positive experience of their own fandom interaction, though it might if they try to continue to engage online through those traditional fandoms, which, he kind of. Again, I'm sure there's some out there that like, we don't talk about this. This is like Voldemort. We block.
That she who must not be named.
We block all the mentions of this on our subreddit.
Probably. And that's how you like gatekeep the discourse and maintain high involvement and keep purchasing it up.
Yeah, because you've either got to, I mean, because like with everything, with that cognitive dissonance, you've either got to like take the hit and just be like, well, that's a yikes for me. Like, she is what she is, and she's mouthing off this stuff, but like, can't really change my engagement with the fandom over the last 15 years. Like, it doesn't make me a terrible person because I'm just finding out about this, or it just like it, or like it utterly like, or you deny it, or it utterly consumes you. Like the kind of other two ends of the two ends of that spectrum, where you're
I
just
haven't
like,
checked, but I'm sure there is a slice of that Harry Potter fandom that is dedicated to rationalizing
oh,
their continued involvement in the Harry Potter fandom, and I bet it's painful to read.
I mean, there are a lot of people who 1,000% agree with everything J.K. Rowling says, who are also fans of her work, right?
Oh yeah, no, that's the other part of it, is I think the majority of fans probably just either don't have an opinion about it either way or agree with her.
And I mean, we definitely see that with other like internet discourse. This is a great like, that's what we're gonna name this episode, like J.K. Rowling, Whataburger, and high fan interest.
No, Skunk Works.
Skunk Works, J.K. Rowling, Skunk Works, and high fan interest. But I mean, it's like the same thing with really, you take anything. I mean, take any flash in the pan internet fad. Let's take NFTs. Like, again, if you're a fan of your bored apes, if you're still holding on to them apes, hoping that they're gonna make you some money, it ain't looking good.
Not looking
But
good. Can't
like,
back out now.
yeah, it's kind of
I
too
was an
late.
expensive ape.
But like at the time, maybe it looked cool. Like maybe you're with it. And like if you had that disposable income, you're probably not too upset about it. 'Cause like,
Yeah, if you were planning on buying a house with that investment, like you might be a little upset, but
I mean, there are people I had to stop myself. So I was in the mall, in a nearby city. And they had a guy selling cards and stuff there, and I was like chatting with them about new card game out, and like it was being price gouged. So like MSRP was supposed to be like $40 for this box, and it was like $140. And I was just like, that's kind of ridiculous. And they were like, well, like it's gotta help the aftermarket. And I was like what? Like, is this isn't like, it's a card game for kids. Like, I mean, this is the new Disney one. Like, there are plenty of adults who play it. But I was like, it's a card game with
Eskimos. What are you
Disney
talking about them?
characters. Let's add that to the list. There are a
No,
lot of Disney adults who
noted.
really like this card game. But like it was a low print run, and they were like, well, they're not going to reprint it. And so basically it just becomes an aftermarket thing. And he's like, it's important for the investors. And I was like, the investors. And like it breaks my mind, because that's how I feel with like Magic cards. Like, I don't mind if I have a card that's worth some money. I have some cards that are worth some money. I have sold cards that are worth some money. I am not going out of my way. I'm not going to spend $100 on a card, $50 on a card. But there are people who will, because the hope that it goes up in value. And there are some cards that will over time. But like, I can't identify it with it so much that like, or with the investment side of it so much that like, I need to buy up stuff, not to play, but to put in a box and never use. I have some stuff that I collect, and it's not particularly valuable. It's like, I really like this set. I want the cards from this set. I'm going to make a decision. I'm going to do it smart. I'm going to buy it while it's new, so it doesn't sit around for 3 years and go up in value. And if it goes up in value, cool. That's great. Good for me. I'm not going to sell it. Like, it's part of my collection. I want to keep it. But like, that kind of ties into that mentality, because like, the company's not, like, I think about like the identity as like an investor in Magic: The Gathering cards. And there are plenty of people who like that and who are engaged in or are high identifiers with that. But like, there's part of me that's like, but don't you want to play the game? And like, don't you want the game to be accessible to people? Like, we should be reprinting these cards because we want them to be accessible to people. I want more people playing this game so that this game keeps going for another 30 years. I want to play it when I'm 70. Right?
Well, I think at that point it becomes like, I feel like an investor in a Disney card game or a Magic card game is like, at that point, you're no longer a fan of the card game itself, because like, at least I can like throw a bone to like fantasy football players, right? Like, they're still playing and watching, but like,
It's
the
true.
if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, but the value of a card doesn't go up just because it wins a bunch of tournaments, right?
Yes.
It does.
So, well, and I
So
will
you
say this.
can.
Yeah, so you want to, the idea is that you want to kind of like, if you are investing, you want to predict what cards are going to be popular. So what cards are going to be coveted and used? And there are some, like, I have some common cards that there should just be a glut of, and they're like $2 or $3 a piece for a card that should probably be like 10 cents. And it's because it's played in certain formats. Or they're just coveted, or they're not printed enough. So even when there's a reprint, they're expensive cards. And usually it's like it's a supply and demand issue, but because of gaming shops and the secondary market and online sellers, it becomes like an investment. Like, you're trying to predict. And I mean, if you're smart about it, you know that like, a set's released, a couple of days later, all the prices tank because people are opening packs and don't need them anymore. And then over time, things stabilize. Like, the big hit cards, the cards that people want, go up. I mean, I've got cards that I bought for like $1 a piece that are worth like $20 a piece now, because people have started realizing, oh, these are actually kind of good. And I was just like, oh, that's pretty art, or I like this. I'm gonna buy two or three of them just to have, like, I put them in a deck or something. But like, those are other things like rarity and scarcity and stuff all play a role in that. But like, yeah, at some point, you do kind of have to detach yourself, like, if you're only in it for like the investment.
Because that becomes a game in and of itself at that point.
Yeah, and you're probably not investing in just Magic, right? Like, there are people online who do like investment stuff. There's a couple of investment like Magic channels on YouTube, and like, they talk about a lot of different card games. I find them fascinating just because like, it also helps me to know like, ooh, this thing's tanking. I can now buy the cards that I want from it because they're more affordable. But yeah, you almost have to nowadays, like, if you are a fan of the card game, kind of at least have some knowledge about some of like the value and the worth, and like, are you getting a good deal if you're buying singles? Is it worth it to open up packs? Because so like, there it almost becomes part of the fan community, or part of the interest, is just understanding like the worth of what you have. Because like, I've sold some of my stuff to then get store credit in places and buy more stuff that I wanted. But knowing that like, these are valuable cards, I'm not going to use them. I don't want them, so I can give them to someone who will sell them, or who does want them. Yeah, I mean, it does like, and it, to some extent, it does become, and I guess like part of me high identifying as a fan, like of the interest, also comes with me like knowing, having to almost know some of this stuff. And I can talk about it in depth because it's just part of being a fan of the community, because it is so heavily tied. Because Wizards of the Coast, Hasbro, like they care and they don't care about the secondary market. It's kind of a weird fan relationship with the company, because like they do prop up the secondary market. They do very scarcely reprint certain cards because that increases demand for them, people buying boxes and chasing those cards to then resell. And like there's this huge corporate strategy about like, when do we reprint this? When do we, you know, what kind of like cards do we print in this new set? Like, do we increase the power? Because the power is going to get people, powerful cards are going to get people buying it. It's scummy, but it's capitalism. And people will defend it,
Absolutely.
especially if their livelihood revolves around reselling cards on online.
That's insane to me that people's livelihoods could rely on reselling Magic cards.
Mean, I will say for the vast majority, and I don't want to be like an apologist here, but
More like the fact that it's possible, not that I like think that there's a bunch of people doing it, but just that is a pathway to paying your bills is insane to me.
I think for the most part it is shops. So like a local store also has an online presence. And so there are marketplaces where like it aggregates everyone's stuff. So you sell on those marketplaces because getting people through your door isn't the only way that you need to pay your bills to like run your company.
Right.
But yeah, but like that it's so important. That like it requires some of these like these strategies and like understanding the market value of a piece of cardboard. It's a
Kind of
lot.
insane.
Yeah. But in the
Yep.
same way, you know, people highly identify with all sorts of weird things and get very defensive about, you know, their Teslas and their Stanley Cups. I am late to the game on the Stanley Cup game, but that is brand new at the time of
I
this
know
recording.
nothing. I know nothing.
Do you? Like, is this all new to you?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Like,
No.
Jordan brought it up a couple of days ago. And then on Twitter, I saw a woman get like pulled over and arrested because she had like stolen like 60 of these cups
Yeah.
or like 100 of them or something like that. And I'm like, I don't know. Does this have anything to do with hockey?
Nope.
Like,
Nope. There
okay.
it's like Stanley, the thermos company.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've produced a series of like insulated cups, mugs,
As
and
one does.
they have different colors and exclusive stuff. It's like Beanie Babies you can drink out of. That's the new title of the episode. No, but yeah, I mean like the one thing I think it has going over Beanie Babies is that you could at least use it as a cup, right?
Yeah.
Like it has utilitarian purpose when people don't care. But it's like what were some of like the other like I forget the name. There was a bunch like a couple years ago it was really popular particular thermoses, particular like water bottles. And I know it off the top, it's like on the tip of my tongue. But it's that.
And now nobody really cares about them anymore.
Yes, and Stanley Cup is the next big one. It's gotten really big on like TikTok and Instagram and like some of these social media sites, and people have kind of gone crazy.
Yeti.
Yeah, Yeti, and then before that it was something else, and then there was like the one thing that like all like teen girls in like high school and middle school were there's a particular water bottle that they all needed.
In the early aughts.
I think it was a little. It's a little closer to where we are today, but it's like every year or
Oh,
so.
yeah.
There was
Something happens and people freak out about it.
right. It kind of blows up. Some things go viral, and then they're like, "Well, everyone wants this cup." And then, of course, like again, like we'll use Like with Magic, there are people who go, well, I need to buy some to resell them on eBay, and that's how I'm going to get money. It's the Beanie Baby market. I'll see if I could find like a podcast or something that explains the Beanie Baby craze, because that's like it's the same thing. This thing was produced. Some secondary sellers helped to build the secondary market around it and created this like supply and this demand craze. And then they were buying up all the supply, so then they controlled the supply and could sell it for hundreds of dollars. And that's kind of what we're seeing with yet another thing. It's hyper consumerism. And these people, their magnitude for Stanley Cup identity and not, hockey fans, like I can understand their sport fan identity around the winners of the Stanley Cup, a little easier.
No, I knew what the award was for doing the best hockey in North America, did you?
What?
You didn't know. I would know what the award was for doing the best hockey in North America, did you?
Mean, it's, I would argue it should be somewhat common knowledge, even if you're not one. I don't watch hockey.
I enjoy hockey. I just don't watch it.
This is a really good, so again, like thinking about like what kind of fan are you around your interest. This is the Yiannopoulos 2017. For Greek football fans, that there are three types of fans. There are casual fans, so quote, I like all types of sports. Like I like hockey, like football. I like a Yeti
That's fair.
mug. I like a Stanley mug. I like a Starbucks mug. I like a Walmart $5 mug. Like it doesn't really matter. I like all mugs.
I like a La Crusette mug.
There are rational fans. The cost of the game affects my attendance. So like, look, I like a good mug, but I'm not going to pay $100 for a mug on eBay. Like, I like a good Magic card. I'm probably not going to spend more than a couple bucks on a Magic card. Piece of cardboard. If I pull that card, if I draw it out of, get it out of a pack, I will gladly accept it. But maybe I'm not going to go out of my
Like,
way.
I will pay for the initial purchase of a Minecraft for my Switch, but I will never do DLC content unless you send me a coupon. And then I will use it once.
Maybe if it's something cool and you can afford it, great. But I'm not gonna like break the bank. I'm not gonna like go into poverty because I'm not gonna spend a
I don't even
dime
go to the
on more
market. Yeah, I'm not
Minecraft.
spending a dime on any DLC content.
I mean, to
The
be fair,
N64 didn't have it. I'm not doing it.
I bought Minecraft in beta and I'm still using it today on my laptop.
Huzzah.
Paid like $10. And then you have ardent fans where like football is a religion to them. And that's what we're seeing. That's what we're seeing with the Stanley Cup people. Like it's
Right.
or again, like it's something else. It becomes like a consumer, not even a consumer fan, but like an investor fan. I wonder if there is something. I don't know if the book really gets into that, but this idea of like you're not really a fan of the interest, but it is this like this thing that you can latch on to like sell, exploit.
Well,
But
we do
that's
have the economic and material motivations for engaging in fandom, which we'll get to. But
yeah.
yeah, no, I think when we couch it in this way, I was thinking about like there are some musical artists that I would travel to Dallas to go see, I think, which would probably put me in an ardent fandom with them or about them. But like, I don't know, because I don't like update their like keep up to date on their tours either. So like, I
It's
wouldn't know if they were in Dallas.
but like you would travel to Dallas for a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
Like, would you go to Maine to see this person?
No. I'm not going north of the Mason-Dixon to save my life. We
So
have too many colleagues who've come down from there.
you're
And they're never going back.
probably not an ardent fan then, right? Because you're not gonna go on
Probably not.
you're not gonna go on the pilgrimage. But
Yeah,
like,
I'm not going to California either, but like I'll go to Denver or Dallas.
yeah, if they're like a couple hour drive away, like go to Denver.
Yeah.
I'll drive to Albuquerque if they're playing in Albuquerque.
Yeah, absolutely.
But like, I'm not going to like Phoenix. I'm not
Nope.
going. I'm not going
I'm
to.
not going to New Orleans.
Not to see that.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair.
So.
Okay, maybe I'm not an ardent fan of anything.
But like, but that's a rational fan. Like, that would be a rational fan. Like, you really like
That would
it.
be.
You want to engage, but like, there is a distance that it is kind of irrational for you to travel. I think the ardent
Not
fan
doing that.
is a nice way to say the irrational fan.
The
Like,
irrational fan.
it's kind of like the idea of like, you like a good insulated mug. You if you saw a Stanley mug, you would buy one. If you could afford it, it's probably not too much if you found it on the shelf. The irrational fan is the person who's waiting like the night before outside of a Target
Fair.
for a cup.
Or has like a ton of bets in on what is it, eBay for multiple cups.
There's this, yeah, there's that like tipping point. And that's kind of like that's fan magnet. Like 1 to 7, where do you score in your fan identity? That's that difference. But I mean, I think we could argue that you could be a 7 and still be a rational fan.
Right, which is kind of like, I don't know, maybe, and this maybe we should have been in the episode before this one, but like these categories are helpful qualitatively to
Yeah.
like understand fans, but then like you can't really do anything with those categories. So like that's why we used this like continuous variable, but like we don't actually have a distinction between like a rational and irrational fan on the 1 to 7 Likert.
Yeah, because it's going to be how you define yourself, and then what would extend that further is how you like actually behave. So, you could be a 7 as a fan of Minecraft, but you've never spent a dime other than your initial purchase. You're not buying mods, you're not engaging with it in any other way, you're not going out of your way to
I'm not going to MineCon.
Right. Yeah, you're not going out and buying, a bunch of extra stuff that's tied to it. And even then, like if you did, there's again the difference between the person who's like, I want to hang this on my wall, or like, I want this thing, I can afford it, it's not gonna like impair me or hurt me in any way, versus the person who's like, you know what, like I might need to skip work today to go and wait at Target for the Stanley mug. Where there is this kind of like irrational, like I'm gonna lose a day's worth of pay that I might not be able to afford in order to do this. Like it's not new either. I mean, I remember I was a kid when like there was the Power Ranger craze. I had parents who went and like waited outside of a Toys R Us to get Power Rangers for like Christmas. We got Power Rangers that Christmas, but like whew.
It was a close call.
But I would say like that's maybe a different thing because like you're getting it for your kid for Christmas, but there's definitely like a similar like supply demand kind of like consumerist mentality that like we've just been dealing with. I mean, Black Friday is a thing
Less of a
because
thing now than it used to be.
yeah, but
I
like
think Black
if
Friday might be dying.
and until they put some Stanley Cups out this year,
Yeah,
and then people are going to be stepping on each other to get those cups. But yeah, I mean, we're probably a little closer to where then maybe we can kind of like end on this thought. Where we're getting in like a modern sense would be like, I've heard that some of the younger generations really up in arms with like, Apple versus Android. I mean, it's kind of always been kind of a thing, but like depending on what kind of phone you have, supposedly says a lot about you. And it's like, does it?
Does it? It tells me I'm not a fan of Apple. Or if I am a fan, I'm not a high identifying fan.
Yeah, like, the older, more mature fan studier in me is like, my magnitude for my phone. Like, I need a phone that works.
Yes.
I don't need to spend $800 on a phone. Was like, I think my next phone's gonna be like one of those like redone Nokia bricks just to mess with people.
It's gonna be a flip phone
I
after this
yeah.
one goes out.
Well,
Like, I don't need it.
you know the Razor's back, right?
Yeah.
You can get one and like just have old
Hell
school flip
yeah.
phone with like a modern, like some modern tech in it. Like, cool.
Cool.
But that's like,
About that. Maybe
yeah.
I'll increase my Razer fandom identity a little bit and switch over to that.
But like doing something like that would probably decrease your magnitude for all the other brands. Like even if you weren't a fan of Razer, by not in, like engaging with like the modern Android versus Apple discourse, you're not. And that is the more healthy option. Is
Yep.
that if someone really wants to get up in arms about their Tesla or their Apple or their Stanley or whatever brand they're highly identifying with, you don't have to engage with them. Just let them like scream into the void and enjoy your life.
Enjoy your life.
So, with moderation and everything.
Yes.
That's the and that's going to be the theme as we get through this. We will criticize and we'll talk about chapter to chapter, but moderation and everything. Magnitude is fine, but like don't let it go too far. Temper yourself because it's associated with so many positive things, but a lot of negative stuff as well. And you have to kind of balance that, like with anything. It's the same thing with like identity with like one's job. Like, I love teaching. I love being a psychologist. I love the university I'm at.
Not tethering my self-esteem to any of those
Yes,
things.
I'm not gonna ride or die, because I'm setting myself up for pain at that point. So, yeah.
Feel nothing. Enjoy your life.
Well, everyone, on that note, we will see you next time when we get into chapter 2. Have a good one and goodbye.
Sounds good. Bye.